But now we have a chance to talk to Dr. Tej and Ruta Singhwa. How are you doing, sir?
Good, Phil. How are you? Happy New Year.
Well, Happy New Year. And
yes.
I really appreciate always that you are active and on top of all stories, particularly about the Great Lakes region. And you've written, of course, again, I want our listeners to know, a wonderful book called Healing a Nation. And it's your personal, I'd say, almost a confession about your life and what it's like. And you really provide a marvelous story for people to comprehend modern Rwanda, as well as what it's like to be in your shoes. I want to ask you about a number of things, but you recently wrote a letter, which I saw, which I think it's at GreatLakesPost.com, where you thanked the government of Burundi for raising an issue which is very important to the Burundians, that is the death of their president in 1994. Could you talk a little bit about why you wrote the letter and why you think that, why you were glad that they brought this issue up?
Yes, thank you, Phil. I did write to the president of Burundi and thanked him for bringing up this issue because, as you know, the tragedy of 1994, in which two presidents were killed on President Kagame's orders, and the subsequent events in Rwanda and the Great Lakes region that have cost so many millions of lives. This is a very important issue I have discovered when I have traveled in the last 5 years and met many Rwandese. It's a chapter that is yet to be closed because the truth about it has to be told. And I thanked the president because even after my confession in 2011, in which I testified in France before the French judges who have been investigating the matter, I subsequently was able to talk to Madame Habyarimana, and I was able to talk to Mrs. Nariamira, first to acknowledge, that, and also to ask for forgiveness. And I think it's very important for Burundi to be able to come to grips with this important reality of their modern history, because truth-telling, as we've discovered in Rwanda, as the Burundians know, is an integral component of finding true reconciliation and true healing for a nation. So I thought that many years later, it was absolutely important that the leadership of Burundi should have come out and said, yes, we shall now struggle to make sure that the truth is known and the truth is revealed, that yes, it's President Kagame that was very much involved in the death of our president, President Cyprien Ntaryamira.
Yes. Now, and of course, in relation to that, I know the government of Burundi was pointing out that they were being subject to a lot of attention from foreign powers about their domestic affairs. And they said, well, you know, you're talking to us, but we have a neighbor where there are refugees from our country, Burundians who are in Rwanda, and some of them are being recruited to join armed groups to attack our country. The country of they're organizing in Rwanda. Do you find those stories credible, and why would Rwanda be doing that?
These are absolutely credible stories, first from what we read in the media, but from our own sources about Rwanda's involvement in finding the tensions and finding people who are fighting the government of Burundi. That is true. And this is, of course, it's not only Burundi and ourselves, because Burundi was refighting to the request by the United Nations. And in fact, this country itself, the government of the United States, has indeed, in the testimony of no other than the Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, the ambassador who heads that office, it's true that Rwanda is very much involved. As to the motivations of President Kagame and his government being involved in Burundi, I can only see three reasons why he would do that. First and foremost, President Kagame has been looking for client presidents in the region. from the days of President Kabila to the young Kabila, and if he cannot do that, then he resorts to arms and war making, either direct involvement or through proxies. Mm-hmm. And in the case of Burundi, of course, President Kagame is looking for a president of Burundi who would be a satellite leader or a proxy leader, simply listening and doing the bidding of President Kagame. That's number one. And of course, the Burundians have found that unacceptable. Secondly, President Kagame has been trying very hard to make the political conflict in Burundi to look like an ethnic conflict between the Hutus and Tutsis. Of course, the Burundians have been ahead of us, and I say ahead of us as Rwandans, because through the Arusha process and what they have been able to do in these last couple of years, they were able to acknowledge that, yes, they are Hutus and Tutsis, and yes, in order to transcend that, they've got to have a mixture of democracy, as well as making sure that there's some kind of institutional arrangements that make sure that there are guarantees for both Hutus and Tutsis in making sure that they all feel that they belong to the same country and they can provide guarantees against abuse, either by the majority or a minority. I think the Burundians have been on the forefront. And if you look at what is going on in Burundi right now, of course, there are people amongst the Hutus who are opposed to President Nkurunziza. There are Tutsis who are opposed. There are Hutus and Tutsis within Nkurunziza's camp. And so Kagame, who runs a clique of Tutsis, mainly military Tutsis, who run the show in Rwanda, would like to make Burundi a replica of Rwanda. And of course, the Burundians have been very much ahead of us, and they won't accept that. So that is the second motivation. Mm-hmm. And the third motivation is that President Kagame creates chaos in the Great Lakes region, and then he goes to the international community and says, well, you see, I'm the stabilizing agent in the region, and you see the United Nations Secretary General, you see the Americans, you see the British, you see the European Union, you see the African Union, running to Kagame and say, oh, Kagame, can you please help us to stabilize the region? And I've said that asking President Kagame to help stabilize the region is like, somebody sets fire on a house, and you go to the same person and say, oh, please, can you help us actually to put down the fire? Yeah. And so I see those three motivations to have a client president, client government in the neighboring countries, trying to make the problem of Burundi an ethnic one, and of course trying to make himself relevant to the international community.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, I really agree with that. He seems to have run into sort of a problem there. Some are saying that the many African countries are far more leery of him than they were, say, a decade ago, and he is not so successful. What is your estimate?
Oh, yes. In fact, in these last 5 years alone, I think President Kagame has lost most of the little credibility he had, because if you look at it like 5 years ago, especially here in the West, President Kagame was like a star.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at what has happened in Rwanda, his involvement with M23, the problem of Burundi, his repeated insults to Tanzanian leaders, his problems with South Africa because of his agents repeatedly pursuing Rwandan exiles and killing them and trying to assassinate them. If you follow the whole issue of extending his term so that he becomes a life president, at least until 2034, until he probably leaves the presidency to his son or his wife. All these problems, I think, have created another picture of Kagame that 5 years ago would not have been even something that could be imagined. So he's more isolated in the region, and I think he's becoming even more isolated internationally. Even his friends, like the Americans and the British, are increasingly looking at him as a burden, as a shame on their shoulders, because how else would democratic governments support a dictator who kills people, who imprisons and closes imprisons people who are who simply want to exercise their rights, who keeps people outside of their countries, who assassinates his opponent, and who declares himself a life president. How else could democratic governments like the United States or the British or others be in the company of such a dictator? So even his friends increasingly are beginning to feel very unsure as to whether they should continue supporting such a dictator.
Yes. This is Dr. Thejin Rudasingwa, who, by the way, is a real doctor. Paul Kagame gets doctorates every once when he travels. People give him doctorates. Unlike Dr. Rudasingwa, he didn't go to school.
You know, in Kinyarwanda, we do run, Dr. Fear, one day you should also appear. We do run an internet radio called Radio Itahuka. And a long time ago, I baptized Kagame Dr. Maganya because he has all these doctorates. But I called him Dr. Maganya because Maganya in Kinyarwanda is like lamentation. Often, once in a while, he laments about so many things that foreigners are not doing for him. So I baptized him Dr. Maganya. So many Rwandans know him as Dr. Maganya.
Well, he earned that one.
yes, now, I gave it to him.
And lastly, I got to ask you about a very important matter. The woman, Victoire Ingabire, a very noble person who is quite peaceful and tried to organize a peaceful movement. She is currently has an appeal at the African Human Rights and People's Rights in Arusha, arguing, I believe, that she cannot get a fair trial. I assume you agree with her. Could you talk about it?
Yeah, he has appealed to the East African Court of Appeal. But from the information I've gathered about that is that the government of Rwanda, in fact, ever since they heard that she had appealed and that she should appear before the court, they have made her life even more miserable, by making her life within the prisons more miserable. Most likely they won't allow her to go to the East African court. But the important thing to know is that she's a prisoner of conscience. She's in jail because she's somebody who fights for democratic and human rights of the people of Rwanda. We consider her to be our leader because, remember, we have a platform of 5 political parties, and she, like other political prisoners, are part of the coalition that for now, in fact, I'm the chairman of that coalition.
That's the Rwanda National Council.
Yes, there's Rwanda National Council, but the Congress, but there's also the Party Amahoro, FDU, for which she's the president, PS Imberakuri, whose leader, Bernard Ntaganda, has recently spent 5 years in jail, and the party of Deo Mushahidi, who's also in jail for life.
Yes.
For no other reason whatsoever, and it's very important that for listeners, especially Canadians and people in the United States, know this. Bernard Ntaganda was in jail for no other reason. Deo Mushahidi is serving a life sentence for no other reason. Victoire Ingabire is in jail for no other reason than actually saying that the people of Rwanda deserve human rights, that the people of Rwanda deserve civil and political rights. And they are in jail because they are struggling for that. So they stand alongside the likes of Mandela and other people who in history have fought for the rights of their citizens. And so most likely the government of Rwanda won't allow her to go to Arusha. But the fact of the matter is that we had and the people who represent her to take the matter to the court. And I would only conclude by saying, yes, she could not have justice in Rwanda. She may never have the opportunity to have justice in the East African Court of Appeal. But, you know, Phil, there's this, the famous saying that the long arc of history bends towards justice. It doesn't matter how long it takes, but ultimately, Victoire Ingabire and her colleagues in jail in Rwanda will be free because that's what we struggle for every day. We struggle for that justice, theirs and ours. And we have no doubt whatsoever that at the end of the day, justice will be served.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. I like that summary. This is Dr. Theogen Rudasingwa. And we look forward to your more writings and hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you so much. And by the way, Phil, I would like you to invite me to Canada because the Canadian government has refused me to come to Canada.
Oh, we will definitely invite you. I'm going to get a bunch of lawyers and get you in here. Thank you very, very much.
Start working on it. Thank you. Have a good way.
Okay, Doug. Bye-bye. That's Dr. Theogen Rudasingwa. We're going to invite him to Canada because the Canadian government refuses to let him come. That's because, I guess, he's not an admirer of the president of Rwanda, who has received so many accolades from wonderful people like Tony Blair and Bill Clinton and all the arms he can possibly use, as well as having enriched himself considerably in office. I reference you to David Himbara, the economist, who's talked about all these things. Now, we should in a few moments be talking with Zafar Bengash, crescent-online.net. We need to know, of course, what is transpiring with the talks, with the ceasefire in Syria, and if there's anybody qualified to talk about it, it's Zafar. If you haven't seen this book, by the way, apropos of our previous interviews, there is a new book by a Canadian journalist, a man who tried to teach journalism in Rwanda, and it's called Bad News, and his name is Anjan Sundaram, and it's just out, and it documents pretty much and what we've been saying for about 20 years, that to be a journalist, a real one in Rwanda, is to risk your life. What he did was there, like a lot of people, wanted to help out. They interviewed, or rather trained young people to be journalists, but what they discovered was that all their students were disappearing, which will happen in a country run by dictatorship.